Comics in Motion is proud to be sponsored by Renovations Press, home of the world-renowned Tracksuit Man, the story about traveling to which we can all relate, and something we've all missed this last year. Renovations Press continues to make the decades-long quest to bring quality independent comics to the masses, with three comics each year featuring the supergroup slash government experiment gone wrong, Section 12. Click the link in the show notes for more information about how you can buy some high-quality independent comics. And stay tuned, because each time a new issue comes out in 2021, Comics in Motion listeners will be eligible to win free copies of Section 12. Click that link, check out Renovations Press, support them on Patreon. You'll be happy you did. What started as just an appearance on Indie Comics Spotlight has turned into an excellent partnership between Comics in Motion and Renovations Press. We look forward to bringing you some amazing content.
To the Batmobile. Let's go.
Come on, Bob. For old times, huh?
Harley Quinn, nice to meet ya.
Pardon my French. Fuck those fuckers.
Marvel character ever, but you should never meet your heroes, because honestly, he's a bit of a dick.
Now might be a really good time for you to get angry.
That's my secret, Captain.
I am inevitable. Smash!
Right, welcome everybody to another episode of the Comics in Motion podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Chris Phelps, and my co-host and very good friend is Mr. Dave Horrocks.
Hi, Chris, and hello to our listeners out there. Welcome to Comics in Motion TV and movie reviews for shows that are based on comic books. Myself, I'll be reviewing from the perspective of a long-time comic book reader.
And I'll be reviewing from the TV and movie perspective.
And what we also like to do is we also like to spoil the hell out of everything we review. And so if you haven't watched our choice of the week, we'd advise you to proceed with caution. And remember, with an average podcast comes no responsibility. Now, Chris, got something a little bit different this week, haven't we? What are we going to review?
Well, Dave, we're going for the brand new Netflix series, which is co-produced and written by Mark Millar. It is... I don't know, Dave. Jupiter's Legacy. That's how memorable it was. But anyway...
It made an impression on you then.
Complete memory fucking blank. But yes, Jupiter's Legacy, Dave.
Awesome. Now, I'm going to go in a bit old school here, Chris. Remember when we used to do the whole this is the comic background, this is the movie background and stuff?
Yeah.
I will just say we've done a few things by Mark Millar, or Mark Miller, as some people say. We've done Kick-Ass, we did Kingsman, didn't we? And generally, I think you like those things. Actually, Wanted as well was also Millar.
Yeah.
And this one was a little bit different for him. So, you know, this was... Millar was obviously the writer, creator, and he was... the artist was a guy called Frank Quitely, who is absolutely brilliant, Chris. If you see his artwork, just whatever he does. I don't think he draws that quickly, but everything, it just looks amazing and pops off the page. So, you know, it was a few years ago now that Millar was building up all of these characters. He'd had advice from Stan Lee himself, you know, who said, well, if I just wrote about the characters that I grew up with, you know, you wouldn't have any Spider-Man or Fantastic Four or anyone like that. So, you know, Millar really took that to heart and created all these new characters, these new stories and stuff, and created this brand called Millar World. And Netflix bought them out, and then this is kind of the first series, really, as part of that whole Millar World brand. So... just a bit of background for you there, Chris. We are going to cover the first three episodes. Now, this did drop last week, last Friday on Netflix. And as Netflix like to do, they dropped the whole season, didn't they?
Yeah.
So the whole eight episodes is there. And I'm sure people can go through and binge. And we've talked about this in the past, haven't we, Chris? Where, you know, there's a bit of pressure. Loads of people will have binged it, got right to the end there. But what we thought is we'll put out the first few episodes so people don't, you know, feel like they have to binge the whole eight episodes. We'll just cover the first bit and then maybe we'll circle back to it in a few weeks' time.
Good stuff, good stuff. Now, Dave, obviously, for me, this was something I wasn't sure on. I thought, you know what, this is going to be... the business. It's something different. He's got time traveling as such, as in not, they don't time travel, but it goes backwards and forwards through like the 30s to modern times as well. So yeah, a really interesting subject. And we were aware of this a long time ago, weren't we? We'd got like a preview copy of it, but like I say, we just wanted to sit on it really and see where it is. I've not seen a lot of buzz online, but I'm interested to see what you actually think of this, because it's been quite polarizing from what I've seen on a lot of the review sites.
Yeah, I mean, it was directed by Stephen Esther Knight, wasn't it? So didn't he do Daredevil?
Oh,
I think he did Daredevil, or at least three episodes of that. But he did a bit of Buffy the Vampire Slayer, did a bit of Angel, Smallville, Dollhouse as well. So, you know, he's kind of written a few things there, but obviously he's showrunner for this series, and he's sort of written the first episode, but then he's directed the first two, and then just you've got different. Let me see. You've got Christopher Byrne directs episodes 3 and 4. You've got Charlotte Branston, Mark Yobbs. So you've got a few different people, and this is what they tend to do with the series, isn't it? You have one nominated showrunner, but then you have lots of different directors and writers, and then that gives it that different feel sometimes when it works. But when it works well, I think it works well, but I don't know about this one. showing my hand a little bit straight away. But Chris, should we get into our trailer?
Let's go.
The island and what we had to do to earn these powers.
90 years, and what do we have to show for it?
We've made a difference, Shell.
What was Dad like when he was younger?
Nothing ever rattled him faster.
The man I knew was never at home when I was a kid.
Too busy saving the world.
Brandon, Chloe, everything you do is a reflection on this family. You have to be the ideal.
No one can live up to the ideal. Not even Dad.
They're not even close to being ready. And I'm doing everything I can to keep this family from falling apart.
Well, it's not working.
It used to be that you protect your country. They call you a hero.
The world is changing. So I guess we're gonna have to change with it.
I don't know whether I can do this anymore. You do the right thing, somebody dies. You do the wrong thing, somebody dies.
So what would you do if you were the one calling the shots?
Now we start off, and it's very clear that we're in a world full of superheroes, but we go back to 1929, and brothers Sheldon and Walter Sampson are running or helping run their father's steel company. Following the Wall Street crash of 1929, their father commits suicide. And in the present day, Brandon and Chloe and Sheldon's grown children struggle to live up to their father's legacy as a superhero known as the Utopian. Now, Chris, what do you reckon to, let's say, the opening and the first episode, if you like?
Well, I've got to say, but a bit of a tip, Ben, I know you probably know this, but Black Star, who's the sort of baddie in it, it's Tyler Mayne, isn't it, Dave? The old, out of X-Men. So that's in Sabretooth. It's interesting. But no, what I would say is, I'm watching it, obviously I know the guy who plays Sheldon is him out of Transformers. He was like the soldier in it. He's like the Josh Duhamel, whatever he's called. I know he's married to Fergie. That's the only bit of trivia I do know without checking Wikipedia for a long time. They're not together now, out of the Black Eyed Peas. But not Alex Ferguson, Dave, before you say anything. I did think, you know what, the setting's interesting. However, I think it's just really slow. There's some great set pieces, but I'll be honest with you, and I know we're talking about the first episode, it's really difficult to follow what's going on. Because I don't understand what they're going for or what they're aiming for. I can't work out whether it's me. Did I have a blind spot to it? But I think the action is great. And what's funny is we've just done Invincible and gone through that in series. Obviously, we reviewed the first three episodes again, but we've gone through the whole series. And that is phenomenal. This has the DNA of Invincible, probably by accident. It's come out quite clear, but obviously this is live action. I just don't think it delivers on what the background of having Mark Millar there. So I think Sheldon's a really interesting character, and his brother, they're really interesting, because I couldn't work out the dynamic of that, Walter. But again, I don't know whether I care too much with it, Dave. It's a completely different take on the superhero genre. However, like Invincible, we have a Superman character, which is obviously Utopia. So I don't know. It, really weird. Or Utopian, sorry.
Yeah, I don't think it is just you. I think this series really does make you struggle. It struggles to make you care about any of the characters, really. And also, I'm left a little bit unsure about what is it trying to be. You've got... I do like how, you know, you've got this whole theme of legacy. You know, you've got the flashbacks to 1929, and when you see a younger Sheldon and Walter, you know, and they're working for their dad's steel business, and, you know, it's thriving at the time. And then, you know, post the crash, by the way, we're going to spoil everything, as we always do, but just because it's a new series, I'll extra flag that up, that we're going to spoil it. But we get the Wall Street crash, and we find out that the father has gambled all of the company pension funds on the expansion, you know, which they were booming. They were claiming that, you know, half the city's been built with their steel. So they were doing really well. But obviously, that meant they'd overstretched themselves, and basically his dad knows what he's done and then just takes the suicide way out, you know, right in front of his son. But then when you flash forward to the modern day, you can see that something's happened. You know, Sheldon and Walter are these, you know, older superheroes now. But, you know, their children are a little bit detached from them. You know, that Sheldon, the Utopian, he sets such a high standard for everything that, you know, the kids just don't really feel they can live up to that standard. And I think one of the things this does do, I think, is play around with some of the tropes, if you like, of, you know, what it meant to be a golden age hero. You know, those original, the Superman, the Batman, the Wonder Woman's, and all those kind of 30s and 40s characters, you know, early Captain America, people like that. But then, you know, when you get more into the modern day, you get more like the anti-heroes, you get the more kind of edgy heroes who do kill people, you know, and Utopians still clinging on to the values of being a hero, you know, being that Superman style hero. But before I hand it back to you, Chris, I will say I watched these first three episodes twice, because the first time I was just massively underwhelmed, and a bit like you, I was like, I don't know what this is trying to be. If we'd have watched this without watching The Boys, without watching Invincible, those two series, I'd have probably thought, all right, interesting take, you know, a bit more of a realistic take on, you know, if we had these fantastical superheroes in this real world, you know, this is how it would look. But it just felt a bit like a watered down version of it. And before we came on to record, I thought, right, I'm going to watch these three again, give it another chance. Partially because I couldn't really tell you what happened. I'd just forgotten. So went through it again. And actually, I looked at it in a completely different way. Now, I don't know how successful this is going to be, quite honestly, because not many people are going to do that. They're not going to give it a second chance. But having gone back and started to go through it again, I did realise that it's all about family, really. Just happens to have superheroes in it. And all right, you have a few action scenes and what have you. But it's all about family and living up to legacy. And when I started looking at it through that lens, I thought, you know what? I'm enjoying it a bit more.
So, you know what? That's interesting, because I'll be honest, I am not going to go back and watch it. But I know... Maybe that's why. Maybe it's because we've got superhero fatigue, Dave, that we're looking at it from a different lens. But I still don't think it. If you've really, really got to think about that, not normal people. That sounds terrible. Like you're not normal, Dave. But you know, like people who are not into comic books and Mark Millar and things like that, they're not going to give it a second chance, are they? They're just going to watch it for what it is. They're expecting, like you're so right. You're expecting a Boys or Daredevil, you know, something along that production level with that. And it's a totally different story, a different universe, and I get it. But I think that's a great point. I honestly do. But I still think that it's just too dreary. And like, I just didn't have a connection with any of the characters. I wanted Sheldon to be like the man, you know, the proper leader of it all. But it just falls a bit flat. And the superhero stuff, like a lot of the powers are great, and some of the scenes are brilliant. Honestly, they're really, really well made, just like you expect from a Netflix series. So good. I don't know. There's just something I can't put my finger on about it. That at the moment, and obviously we're only doing 3 episodes, and I resisted the chance to go through and watch all 8 episodes, which I will. I genuinely will follow it all the way through. At the moment, it's just left me quite cold to think, oh, this is going to be slog. I'll tell you what it reminds me of, that totally different series, that stupid one where that fucking My Little Pony was stood on his shoulder. What was it called? The fucking guy or Superman of Steel.
Happy.
Fucking hell. That was terrible. But
now, this is not as grisly and dark as that one.
No. I mean, as a show that I should love, but when I watched it, it was just a slog. I mean, the first episode clocks about 42, 43 minutes. Second one's about 33, and I think the fourth one's up to about 40, 41. So they're not massively long episodes, which a bit, it almost like the Disney Plus approach with The Mandalorian and things like that, where it's not set to 30 minutes. The episode is as long as it needs to be with the editing and stuff. So I quite like that about it. But yeah, it's not something you could watch this in an afternoon, the whole 8 episodes pretty much. Give yourself 4 hours and you'd have it all blasted off roughly.
Yeah. I think one of the reasons this resonated with me more the second time, and when I started to think about what is it saying about family and things like that, I was kind of empathizing with the utopian, because, you know, his kids, certainly his daughter, you know, thinks he's a bit of a douchebag. And actually, the very first opening scene, you open up and it's the kids when they're a little bit younger, and Chloe, she actually uses her powers, doesn't she, which is a bit like a sonic scream, a bit of a siren kind of thing, or Banshee, someone like that, you know, if you remember Banshee from the X-Men First Class. And then he sort of tells them off, but then, you know, he says, oh, let's go for ice cream. But then he hears, you know, someone's in trouble, someone needs help. And so he has to let the kids down, and then he has to go off and help someone. And I just thought, it made me think about, you know, just being a parent. And obviously not married anymore, but was previously yeah. married. Trying to be a husband as well. Trying to, you know, have a career. make sure you're bringing in all of the money, but making sure you're taking the kids to all their clubs that they go to, you know, and trying to basically be everything to everyone. And I think, you know, get out the old violins. I just feel like, you know, in the modern day, it is a fucking struggle. You know, because in previous generations, like, where the gender roles were more defined, you know, the guy would go out to work, the woman would stay at home. You would basically share things in that way. It was quite well defined. I'm not saying that's wrong and we should go back to that, by the way. But with trying, I do think we're under more pressure now to be everything to everyone. And there are no kind of... Your phones, you're switched on all the time as well, aren't you?
Yeah.
There's no escape from anything. So, basically, the utopian here is a shit dad. He's an absolute hero to everyone in the world. He bails people out of trouble, you know, and he saves everyone. But his kids fucking hate him. So you know, is he a Superman? I know I'm rambling a little bit here, but for me, these are the types of questions I think this show is asking. Or maybe it's just the way I'm interpreting it.
No,
but that's why it was resonating with me more the second time, I think.
And you know what, Dave? I don't think what you're saying is wrong. Look, me and you do a shitload of podcasts every week. That is a commitment on top of our own commitments. You know, I'm lucky that I'm at a stage in my life where my daughter's 20-odd, so, you know, she'll sit there playing FIFA or Call of Duty or whatever, or doing her own thing, and she still relies on me, but not like she did when she was a kid, where I had to pick her up from school and all. You know, I changed my whole career so I could pick her up from school every day and stuff. So, and that was my decision, and I don't regret that for one bit, and it's something I did. But you're right. I mean, you know me. I agree with that. I am Mr. I'll help everybody. But how many people have my pants down where I'll never get it back off them? And you're right. My phone, you're checking your work emails when you shouldn't be and all that stuff. And work, wherever you work now, people just want you to fucking be on call 24/7. It's a joke. So I agree. I didn't see it from that side. So I'd love to say I'd go back and watch it because I love what you've just said. I do, honestly. I'm not just saying that. I think that perspective is fantastic, and that's what maybe the message is. But I just don't know if I've got the heart to do it, if that makes sense. I think it's a great argument. I didn't actually see that until you've just said it. But I just don't know whether me or anybody else would want to go back and do that and give it another chance, because I just think it's pretty slow and ponderous, sadly.
Yeah. You know, the other Millar stuff that I think about, you know, with Wanted, with Kingsman, Kick-Ass, it grabs you very, very early on. Like, within the first scene, you're grabbed. But with this scene, with the kids playing, and then you see, you know, the girl using her powers, it all feels a little X-Men, doesn't it?
Yes.
And it all feels like, I've seen this 100 times before, and I don't really care about it because I don't know who anyone is. And that perspective I was just talking about, that's only because I've gone back and watched it a second time. But I'm convinced there's a lot of people who just won't care and won't even get past possibly episode 3.
Yeah, yeah. And that is right. And I think you're right, Dave, because the difficulty is, when we've watched stuff like The Boys, which is... Exactly. The Boys for me is what everybody thinks about. How do superheroes do X, Y, and Z? And The Boys for me, even though it's so gruesome and graphic, paints it in such a good way. Homelander, the ultimate nice guy in front of everyone, absolute bastard in real life, you know. But that's, we all think about stuff like what would happen if a superhero had sex with a man or a woman. But we see that in the first series. That woman has sex with that guy, and it's fucking. It's bad, but she sits on his face and kills him. You know what I mean? The landlord, you know what I mean? But it is there. I'm not just saying that to be crude, but it's all things that you think of. I mean, let's not think about how I've come up with that fucking thing that I think of a superhero sitting on my face, Dave. But anyway, but I am saying that you do think about them things. So when you come into this, and you're right, we've seen the stuff with X-Men, even the original stuff with like with Rogue and you know, Logan and all that, the dynamic, we've seen it. How many more times can you tell that story? That's difficult when you've got these tried and tested superheroes, and the MCU has just absolutely blown everything out the water. We've had the Snyder Cut, you know. I'm sure we're going to get the fucking, I don't know, the Christopher Reeve cut for Superman 4, Dave. Let's not go down that route.
We'll probably have the air cut for Suicide Squad. Oh, that keeps fucking rumbling
bullshit.
Along.
Oh, fuck off. I'm sorry. I know people want it, but you can't. Every
Do
time
they?
I'm... I don't know. I saw it trending on fucking Twitter the other day. They want a Harley Quinn cut, don't they? A different cut. And I'm just like, look, you can't do it every time a film doesn't meet your expectations. It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Look, we laughed about Superman 4. Awful movie. I've seen some of them clips now. I've not seen all of them. I've seen some of the clips. It wouldn't have made the film any better, Dave. It would have just been fucking prolonging
that,
the inevitable.
Actually.
Yeah,
I'd heard that.
And I haven't seen all of them, but it's prolonging the inevitable from what I've seen. The production is fucking woeful. You can't do that. That's it. And I think you're deceiving the audience. You've got to go with what's there. You know my biggest gripe? I've banged on about it. I'm so boring with this. But the Hulk in Endgame, I'd love to see a different ending. I don't want a different ending, though. I love that film. I can still go what if on that and not think, well, actually, they've done me over. Yeah, it pisses me off what happened to the Hulk, but that's just because he's one of my favourite superheroes. But I'm not going to go, right, well, we want this. I just think... Everybody now, the Zack Snyder stuff's just going to open up a can of worms for me, and this is completely nothing to do with Jupiter's Legacy, Dave. But from a point of view for this, I just think, yeah, it is what it is. It's well made. There is substance behind it. I just don't think the execution's whether that's the actors, the writing, I don't know. But there's just something where they're a step off some of the production stuff we've seen recently.
Yeah. No, I agree, and I still think it's the emotion of it. I still think it doesn't really, the first time through, it doesn't make you care. But, I mean, moving on a bit, so you can see you've got this dynamic of Brandon and Chloe, and you can see that Brandon is a bit of a crap superboy, really, isn't he? You know, he tries to stop a bank robbery, and nearly gets his arse handed to him, and Utopian has to step in. And then when Sheldon's speaking to his wife, he's like talking about him, he's not ready and what have you. So he's just not living up to his dad's expectations there. But when you get Black Star, or the old Tyler Mayne there, and he's causing havoc, isn't he, with you know, all these superheroes, and you know, he ends up killing a few of them. And it's only then when, you know, Brandon steps in. Because Black Star is kicking the shit. It looks like he's going to kill the Utopian, doesn't it? And then Brandon just comes down and absolutely smashes Black Star's face right in. You know, pretty gruesome special effects there. But then the first thing his dad is like, "We don't kill." You know, again, you're looking at that golden age, you know, what does it mean to be a hero kind of attitude. And, you know, Brandon's like, "Yeah, but it was him or you, and I chose you," kind of thing. So, I mean, what did you reckon to that whole action scene? I mean, that was pretty good, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. It was brilliant. And it was nice that Brandon got that bit of redemption, you know, with it. And it was violent. I think the thing is, and I've always had a problem with this, is why can't superheroes just kill? It's ridiculous. Do they not kill so they can have the bad guys in the prison and then they can escape and refight them again? Because it's not real. The bad people want to kill. I know what you're going to say, but I'm guessing. Okay, maybe not. Sorry, I should have presumed then. But I do think that it's like, well, why not? And I just think that's morally, that is just such an old cliche, I think.
But I think because we're of that generation, we're Generation X's, aren't we? But, you know, when those first batch, when that golden age set of characters came about, that was their thing. They didn't kill. You know, Batman apparently doesn't kill. He will beat the living shit out of people who I'm sure, you know, some of them, must surely die of, like, fucking internal bleeding or something, you know. But for the story, you know, they don't kill. Daredevil, you know, in the Netflix series, throws someone off a roof. And it's very ambiguous whether he knows that they're going to survive that or not. You know, you only have to fall in a particular wrong way and it's curtains, don't you? So, I don't know. I just think it's a trope of those original heroes. That's what clearly differentiates those heroes from the villains. But in this murky world now where you've got kind of anti-heroes and everything, but people want to tell more of a grey story, don't they? So it's not like, you know, Star Wars where, you know, there's a clear, you know, good side and a bad side. Everything's a little bit grey and in the middle now, isn't it? Sometimes good people do bad things and sometimes bad people end up doing good things. But, and I think that's what this series is trying to explore as well. You know, so the newer generation actually doesn't have so much of a problem, and it's winding Sheldon up because lots of people are like agreeing with what Brandon did, including the police.
Yeah, that's true. Look, David, I think as well, and you're right, the cinematography is really good. The cinematography is good in this. I think you can tell. Great in 4K. Like, honestly, it really does pop out when you're watching it. I think as well, like, Black Star's pretty good because obviously we find out that it was a clone, don't we? It wasn't actually Black Star. And we get that at the start, and he comes in, he's got his glasses on, like he's about 70 or something, Dave. He's looking at this caved in face that looks like obviously like him. And obviously Utopian's there talking to him. And they all look like the mates, but they're not. Obviously he's in cuffs and that. But again, straight away, I honestly got Invincible vibes, Dave. And he's quite funny, Black Star. He was giving him some proper shit there. But so I don't think he's completely lost the series. I really don't. Even though I think he's quite slow at times. I do think there's a good dynamic. And I think Black Star, he's not Thanos level, but he's definitely got stuff in the locker there that's really going to come throughout this series, I think, because he just was evil and convincing as like the Utopian's equal, I think.
Yeah, he sort of reminded me a little bit of Ultron in Age of Ultron, where he's got all the quips and stuff and witty comebacks. So, and just even his voice, because we'd only seen Black Star fighting with the heroes where he didn't say anything, which is obviously a bit of a clue there somewhere. But when he is talking with his granny glasses on, it's just a ridiculous combination, isn't it? But I'm intrigued enough to want to know where that goes. But I tell you what, Chris, and in fact, before I move on, again, because he's clearly a clone, I couldn't help but think back to Invincible as well. So you had those two clones there. So again, just everything seems like a callback to something else. But when you go into the, you go back into 1929 and you see Sheldon dealing with his dad, obviously committing suicide right in front of him. And he's now only haunted by his fucking dad. You see, he's going a bit mental. He's got all these drawings and things, and his friends are trying to help him. At this point, Chris, gotta admit, don't have a clue what's going on.
No, I didn't. I thought the second episode was all over the place. We get the funeral, we get everything, don't we? Sheldon gets end up having seizures and that. And I will say, the second one, again, with you, completely like, what the fuck is going on here? But I think the third episode does pick up. I'll give him that, Dave. I think Hutch is the guy who's got that sort of weird weapon thing. But that is, it almost moves the series in a totally different direction. So it's present time. It feel that this is where it's almost schizophrenic. Is this doesn't even feel like it should be from the same series that we've seen. The first two episodes don't really marry up with the third. I think the third's the strongest episode I've seen out of three. Definitely, I think he's got a lot of DNA. So I like the switcheroo thing with this staff thing that he has, or this small whatever it is. It's really interesting.
Yeah, and isn't it funny, because when that first Netflix Daredevil series came out, we were all like, holy shit, this is like, you know, this, we've got the MCU, but this is darker, this is grittier, we're loving it, you know. And that first Daredevil series, in my opinion, was amazing. But then you had Luke Cage, where you had a very schizophrenic season. You know, you had the first half with Cottonmouth was really good. And then the second half just went completely off the boil for me. And when you get into Iron Fist, you're like, fucking hell, what? Did Netflix actually know how to make these things? Or was that first Daredevil, was that just a bit of a fluke? You know, because I don't think the other series really lived up to that early promise. But I recognise the same type of storytelling here, where they've just completely switched.
Yeah.
You know, so again, it's written by someone different. You've got Christopher Byrne. This is the first one that he's directed. So you've kind of got this different creative team behind the wheel, and that's given it that different feel. Like I say, this is how most series run, but I don't know, here it just seems more obvious. But I do like where this is going, you know, because you've got this guy, this big bad, the big man, and you know, he's given this little this group of kids, basically, who are a bit naughty, aren't they? But you know, they're not organized crime, and you're thinking, basically, he's fucked. You know, the big man is essentially going to be the kingpin, isn't he? You know, he's going to be calling the shots everywhere. But when, what's the guy's name? Did you say Hutch, was it?
Hutch, yeah.
Hutch. When the two heavies are, you know, going to take him back to the big man, and the guy grabs it, and he just like, he goes, shark infested waters. And it goes off, and then it comes back. You know, he says home to bring it back. And then he explains, doesn't he? He doesn't have to have hold of this thing. Always, you know, comes back to him. And he's the one who controls it. So if someone else grabs it, doesn't make any difference. But then it's when he just says big man's heart. You know, gives it a few seconds, brings it back all covered in blood and everything. And you're thinking, ah, this little kid here might actually be a bit of a badass.
No, I totally agree, Dave. I think the big man stuff, it's there, and it's something that'll play through the series, hopefully. And I do think that, like you say about the characters, the shark-infested water, it is set up nicely. The Hutch, interesting character. I think the only thing I would say, it does end quite abruptly, but we've got another 5 episodes to go, and I'm just praying that it gets better. I am. I really am. And I know it's the worst thing when you're reviewing something. You go and check the scores and you check what people have said, and that can sometimes muddy the waters, but I'm going to give it a chance, Dave, despite what I think. I think there is something good in there. I think there really is.
Yeah, I mean, for me, I'm a Mark Millar fan, so I'm going to see it through to the end. If I wasn't reviewing it for this, I think I'd be done. That's my honest opinion. But I guess I probably shouldn't have said that before we go into our final review, should I? But before we do that, I will say then that... So IMDb gives it 6.9. And Rotten Tomatoes, the critics' aggregate score is 36%.
Yeah.
Which is not great, really, is it?
No, but I think that's probably where I am with it at the moment, Dave. I'm just hoping it gets better.
Audience score is 74%, which is a weird one. Yeah, it's pretty good, isn't it? So,
yeah.
I mean, we've seen this with things like Venom. Did you see the Venom 2 trailer?
You know what? Everyone's slating it, but I really like the first Venom film. So I wasn't that bothered. I was like, yeah, I'm all in on this. But a lot of people online were saying it was fucking rubbish. So I didn't get that memo at all. I thought it was pretty good.
Yeah. No, so let's see. Now, Chris, should we get into our final review?
Let's go. Right, Dave, I'll go first on this one. It's no surprise, I didn't really enjoy it. There is something there. There's something in the story and the characters that I want to buy into, I want to believe, I want to sort of think, yeah, actually, it's not a bad series. Just at the moment, I just don't think the delivery is great. The action stuff's brilliant, and there's nothing wrong with it. It's definitely worth it for that. I just don't think that there's anything... I don't think there's enough stuff invested in the characters, and the whole 1929... flipping backwards and forwards, not really buying into that at the moment. I know we're setting the table for Sheldon and Walter's sort of family and how they came to what they are, the superheroes and that. I just don't think it's very good. So I'm going to send it, Dave, and I'm going to get this on the right show because we were picked up, weren't we, on the VHS Strikes Back, because you sent it to Elm Street, I think, wasn't it? So
I think we were doing the VHS Strikes Back.
Oh, yeah, that was it.
To Hell's Kitchen.
Which, Dave...
which is the comics.
Yeah, which is the comics. It was our good friend Tony, and I didn't pick you up on it. But I'm going to send it to Hell's Kitchen as well, Dave. I just think it's not absolutely horrendous, but I don't know what I'm watching, and I really, really want it to be better. So I'm hoping and praying that it gets better. So I'd like to, at some point, even if it's just a couple of minutes in one of our reviews, come back and what we thought of it overall, because it's a really, really bizarre series. So What about yourself, Dave?
I don't think we're that far off. I definitely enjoyed it more watching it through the second time, and again, just thinking about those roles in society, about legacy of, you know, different generations. What was it? It was the old Mike and the Mechanics song, wasn't it? Every generation blames the one before. Do you remember that one?
Yeah, I do.
So, you know, it's all playing around that kind of theme. So, although I did get more enjoyment out of it, It hasn't been enough. And I think the reason I'm going to plough through and persevere with it is because I'm a fan of Millar's. I think there's something going on that, you know, there's some kind of mystery that's going to, you know, unravel. It's going to present itself at some point. Because where they are in 1929... you know, there's no superheroes by the looks of it. And this is going to be, you know, something to do with all the drawings and what have you. But it did have me thinking whether, like, Sheldon's just had a seizure or something, and it's all in his mind. You know, and this is all like some kind of Matrix dream or something like that. But I who knows, I'm probably miles off on that. But, yeah, I'm going to watch it, but it's kind of out of duty and loyalty, not because I'm really enjoying it. So if it's down to pure enjoyment, I think I would send it. No, so I am going to send it to a Hell's Kitchen as well. So even though, you know, it's acted very well, it's produced very well, it looks very expensive, but those things just don't really make you care about things. And I think that it's just missing that emotion. It's missing that hook to get you in there and make you care about them.
No, I think that's brilliant. I think that's perfectly summed up, Dave, better than I did, to be fair. I think I feel exactly the same. But no, really interesting. And get over there, guys, to Netflix if you've got it, and just give it a watch. And, you know, contact us on social media if you agree, disagree, what you thought of, like, the series, even the first three episodes, if you'd listen along to the podcast. So we're over there at Comics in Motion P. If you want to email in with any thoughts on the show, comicsinmotionpodcast@gmail.com. And if you do get a chance, drop us a review on your podcast catching app, guys. It just helps me and Dave and all the other guys on the network get up there in the charts on their iTunes and Google Play and stuff like that.
Awesome. Now, Chris, for next week, we have got one of my favourites. Again, we're going to go back to the X-Men universe, if you like, the Fox X-Men universe. And the last time, I think we did X-Men 3, didn't we? So yeah. I think actually the Wolverine came out before this one, but we'll do that again in the near future. But this is going to be, for next week, X-Men First Class.
It shall be the policy of this nation to regard any nuclear missile launched from Cuba against any nation in the Western Hemisphere as an attack by the Soviet Union on the United States. The cost of freedom is always high. No one can foresee precisely what cost it will take. One path we shall never choose, and that is the path of surrender.
You ready for this?
Let's find out.
Listen to me very carefully, my friend. Killing will not bring you peace.
Peace was never an option.
Now, Chris, how are you going to finish us off this week?
I've got nothing memorable to say. I'm not going to say anything stupid because I've got nothing and I wasn't prepared as usual. I heard your breath and I'm like, bastard, he's coming early again. He's got me. So all I'm going to say is... Yeah, well, that's what Sam said. But anyway, no, honestly, just give it a watch, guys, and tell us what you think. I just think it deserves to be watched, but it's also quite interesting what everyone thinks. And that's it, Dave, because I've got nothing. I've got no quotes because nobody's going to remember any quotes from this series at the moment.
All right, mate. Well, cheers for doing that. Cheers for persevering with me. I know you don't like a lot of some of these series that we go through, and you have to slog your way through them. So I know you're going to like this next one, though. Or I'm pretty confident you're going to like next week's.
I'm going to love it. So. I'm going to love it. I've seen it loads of times, so I love it, Dave.
Awesome. Well, take care, mate, and I'll see you next time.
Take care, Dave. Bye.
Excuse me, I'm Eric Lentra.
Taylor Xavier.
Go fuck yourself.
What in the ass?
Tell me something, my friend. You ever dance with the devil in the pale moonlight?
What?
I always ask that of all my prey. I just like the sound.
Let's not stand on ceremony here. Mr. Wayne.
Would you care to step outside?
Come to me, son of Jor-El! Kneel before Zod!
Why so serious? Let's put a smile on that face.
I am Iron Man.
I'm Batman.
Hey.
Whoa!
Hey.